Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Robert Bernhoft, and I represent Dr. Murphy on the appeal of his criminal convictions in the Eastern District of Wisconsin for seven counts of subscribing false returns and three counts of willfully failing to file income tax returns. The two issues that we raise in appeal, a Sixth Amendment right to counsel violation when the district court declined to appoint counsel to Dr. Murphy, and the second issue...
Dr. Murphy, what institution gave him his doctorate?
He's a chiropractor.
No, what institution gave him his doctorate?
I did not do the trial work, Judge Easterbrook.
Chiropractors seem to like to call themselves doctor, but without the benefit of doctoral degrees.
Well, we can call him Mr. Murphy, but that's fine. With respect to the jury instruction issue, we had a directed verdict on the willful fail to file the return and the evisceration of the mens rea element on the 7206 sub 1. The controlling case that we look to for the standard of review on Sixth Amendment violations with respect to right to counsel is this court's decision in Solani. And so we have a clear error standard of review. However, no showing of prejudice is required by the defendant. And as we briefed, the facts of Mr. Murphy's denial of right to counsel are virtually identical to Gravitt from the Third Circuit, which quoted Martin Trigona.
The district judge did offer to seal his financial information that he submitted in connection with any request for appointment of counsel. Why wasn't that enough?
You know, Federal Defender Burke was appointed by the district court. Then he was relieved on motion to withdraw. And then Federal Defender Birdsell was appointed. And there was an exchange with...
How is that an answer to my question?
Federal Defender Burke nor the district court followed up on the issue of sealing information. And Mr. Murphy had counsel at that time, Mr. Burke. And I believe the district court judge didn't think that was necessary. Here's one of the confusing things about the record. Mr. Burke reviewed, in his words, a blank CJA 23 form with Mr. Murphy, made representations to the district court that indeed Mr. Murphy qualified, and the district court accepted that and appointed counsel. And this was in the early part of the pretrial proceedings, which lasted over 7 to 8 months. And it's very odd that then subsequent to that, many months later, the district court insists, in fact, orders Mr. Murphy to go to pretrial services to fill out that form. Now, the tax financial cases are much different than the vast majority of federal criminal prosecutions. The core elements of
tax... I don't understand. Why didn't he fill it out and say he wanted it sealed?
Well, Mr. Burke was counsel at that time, and I assume that Mr. Murphy was relying on counsel. What we have here, what troubles me about...
Is there any evidence that he was? And the problem is that if the district judge says point blank, I want you to do something, and I'll seal it, and you say, I refuse, it's very hard to say, well, I just didn't understand.
No, that's
the judge has told him what to do, and somebody who says, well, I'm going to believe somebody other than the judge, does that at his own peril, one would think.
Judge Easterbrook, that was not the colloquy that occurred between the district court judge and Mr. Murphy. This Fifth Amendment issue...
Well, actually, it was. After the judge had said he would arrange for sealing, the judge said, I direct you to file this affidavit. And he refused, and he said, I refuse to do that until you appoint me counsel. But I won't give the information necessary to get an appointment until I already have counsel.
He could not be compelled to, Judge. It's a Fifth Amendment violation.
Look, and somebody who makes up his own mind about what the law provides, which is obviously his pattern, he has, let us say, idiosyncratic ideas about the law, is in a very bad position. The only question is whether the judge offered him a lawful alternative. And it looks like the judge did.
I don't agree, Your Honor. The Fifth Amendment issue in the CJA 23 began with Mr. Murphy's initial appearance before Magistrate Judge Goodstein.
Well, I don't understand you. Doesn't the sealing eliminate the Fifth Amendment problem?
And no, it doesn't, because the order was never issued. The court cannot compel.
That's not my question. If the financial information is sealed, the implication being it's not going to be used for anything, except to determine eligibility for appointment of counsel, what is the Fifth Amendment problem?
That's the implication, Your Honor, but we look at Gravitt, citing this circuit, Ellsworth in the Ninth, Bronker in the Second, and that defendant in a tax financial prosecution cannot be compelled to fill out that form.
I don't believe that for one second.
Well, the judge can do it.
No one's being compelled to fill out any forms.
He wants a lawyer.
If he wants a lawyer, he has to demonstrate eligibility.
Yes.
If he wants a lawyer paid by the government,
right.
Yes.
If he wants the government to pay him money, he has to demonstrate eligibility.
The district court accepted.
And that's no different from saying if you file your tax return and you claim deductions, you actually have to put down on the tax return the information relevant to the deductions. You can't invoke the Fifth Amendment and withhold that information and get your deduction.
I agree, Judge. The reversible
error.
Well,
maybe Mr. Murphy thought he could.
The reversible error of the district court judge was neither taking it in camera or immunizing. The authorities are clear.
Judges can't grant immunity. The judge could say, I will have this put in under seal so the prosecutor doesn't get to see it.
According to the Third Circuit in Gravitt, the two choices are put him on the record, take his testimony, and immunize him. That's a very thoughtful Third Circuit opinion.
The Third Circuit may have said that, but the Supreme Court has held that federal judges have no power to give anybody immunity for crimes.
In the context
of... That power is statutory.
I believe that...
And it's limited to motions of the prosecutor.
I believe the reasoning behind Gravitt is correct with respect to filling out CJ.
Sealing is certainly adequate.
Yeah. Look, what the Fifth Amendment says is that no man shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself. If the document is sealed and therefore unavailable to the prosecutor, he is not a witness against himself. What's left?
What is left is the perplexing situation where the district court accepted Mr. Murphy's eligibility, appointed a counsel through the Federal Defenders Program, and then later on in pretrial apparently changed his mind and ordered Mr. Murphy down to
prison. With him, of course, you'd expect to change his mind. Anyway, how do we know he couldn't afford a lawyer?
Apparently, according to Mr. Burke's testimony in open court.
Apparently.
I won't say apparently, then. According to Mr. Burke and his representations to the court, he reviewed the CJA 23 form with Mr. Murphy.
It must be a judicial determination, not a lawyer's determination.
And that judicial determination should have been done in camera.
He claimed to be a successful businessman who was victimized here.
Well, he did not claim to be that. The government alleged. Judge, the government alleged that he had a successful chiropractic business, and I think there's enough money that the government talks
about.
His
argument is that he was a successful businessman and that he was a victim of this scam that preys on successful business.
Yes, and the government's prosecutions of the Anderson Arc principals in Seattle, they argued that thousands of Americans had been defrauded of over $40 million, a very extensive fraud case. And so Mr. Murphy had lost, by the government's own case in chief, hundreds of thousands of dollars with respect to his involvement with Anderson's Arc.
So what did he have left?
I don't know, Your Honor. It was not trial counsel. We're appellate counsel. Mr. Burke made representations
and
in the court that he qualified.
And not proceeding under the Criminal Justice Act, I notice.
I'm sorry?
And not proceeding under the Criminal Justice Act.
Thanks, Judge.
Are you paid?
May I briefly
are you paid or are you appointed?
I am paid, Your Honor, paid private counsel.
So he has some money left, right?
Raise an inference that he is capable of paying private counsel, does it not?
I was certainly paid to be here today and to brief the issues.
Now, when you were appointed, did he have to fill out some financial form?
I was not appointed. I'm appellate counsel. And
I'm sorry.
Paid private counsel. Very briefly on the jury instruction issue, the 7203 charge to the jury was an incorrect statement of the law. That charge read that the law required the filing of the return and the defendant intentionally didn't file it. The third prong that's required is that the defendant knew the law required him to file a return. That's a directed verdict on 7203. And then, of course, the district court charged on evasion. The jury was obviously misled and confused. Evasion was not in the indictment. And then, so the court instructs in its good faith instruction on evasion, and the very next sentence takes that away by saying, the government is not required to show that a tax was due and owing or that the defendant intended to evade or defeat the payment of taxes to establish a 7206-1. This is deeply problematic, fatally flawed in 7203, and the good faith instruction was eviscerated with respect to 7206-1. The judge needed to charge on the accusations of the indictment, charging evasion in a 72-601 with different elements. It's just absolutely misled the jury. And I would reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
I have no more time, actually.
Thank you, Judge. I appreciate
Mr. Jacobs. That. Thank you, Mr. Bernhoff. Mr. Jacobs?
May it please the Court. I'm Matt Jacobs. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in the Eastern District of Wisconsin. I was one of the two attorneys trying the case. The defendant knowingly and intelligently waived his right to counsel. He was repeatedly informed of the risks and disadvantages of representing himself. He was informed by Magistrate Judge Goodstein, by Magistrate Judge Callahan, by Judge Stattmiller, sometimes in detail warnings about the need to know about the federal rules of evidence, the federal criminal rules, the local rules, sometimes in broad force descriptions of you have a fool for a client if you represent yourself. His background shows he would understand those warnings. He is a college-educated chiropractor. He has a bachelor's degree in chemistry. He has a chiropractic degree. He was a practicing chiropractor, a small businessman for 17 years, I think, at the time of trial. He was 48 years old at the time of trial, a young man. All judges provided him with numerous opportunities to retain counsel, and he never did, beginning in January of 2005 until the trial.
There's some suggestion in your brief that when he represented to the court that he approached lawyers and they refused to represent him, that he was offering them $20. Where does that come from?
Judge, again, it demonstrates it really the whole Fifth Amendment.
Where does it come from?
It comes from a letter that Mr. Murphy submitted to the court. He submitted a string of correspondence from lawyers that he said, I contacted all these lawyers and they won't represent me. He's trying to show good faith, diligent efforts. One of them is a letter from attorney Mark Rosen. Mark Rosen says, Mr. Murphy, I can't represent you for your $20 fee. It's, I can probably find the specific exhibit, but it's among the letters. Submitted on September 6th of 2005, he submitted, as I say, approximately 20 letters, and among them was one of the letters from Mr. Rosen. And then he was questioned about that a few days earlier in front of Judge Stattmiller on September 1st. Again, Mr. Murphy never asserted his Fifth Amendment. At no point did he say, I don't want to provide financial information because it will incriminate me. July 29th, Judge Stattmiller says, you've never filled out a financial form, whatever Mr. Burke represented. At that point, he says, I never got the opportunity to. I didn't think I had to. Judge Stattmiller says, go fill it out. Murphy says, okay. He doesn't say, I can't do it. It'll incriminate me. He says, okay. Then he complains I may need some more time, but he never says it's going to incriminate me. He just doesn't do it. Next time we're back in court, September 1st, he hasn't provided the financial information to probation, hasn't retained his own counsel. This is 6 weeks later. He doesn't say, I can't provide it because it's my Fifth Amendment. It'll incriminate me. He never asserts. You know, there's a statement in his brief that he strenuously asserted his Fifth Amendment. He never did.
Well, I had kind of, in light of that, I'd rather expected your brief to rely on Garner for the proposition that unless the Fifth Amendment is explicitly asserted in terms, no self-incrimination claim can be entertained. But I don't understand your brief to be arguing that it's been forfeited under the holding of Garner.
That isn't the argument we made, Judge. We simply made the argument he never asserted a Fifth Amendment. There's no evidence that he had a Fifth Amendment privilege, that the information would have incriminated him in any way. And so our position was he never asserted it. In fact, there's no evidence that he has a Fifth Amendment privilege. He doesn't raise it on July 29th. He doesn't raise it on September 1st. And I think when you see what his actions demonstrate is, first of all, that hearing doesn't happen for 6.5 months after his initial appearance. He never retained an attorney throughout that entire period of time. He doesn't retain one after the 6 weeks after July 29th. And then when he's questioned about these quote-unquote diligent efforts, it shows that he's misleading the court. He's trying to slow that prosecution, trying to delay the trial, and he's trying to create an appellate issue. And I think that's really what's going on there. And it shows that's why, you know, it's calculated an intentional decision to waive counsel. He's just using that. He recognized the evidence against him is overwhelming. And so what he's wanting to do is reserve it so he can bring it to this court, hoping to overturn his conviction because the facts are going to result in being convicted. You know, if the court has questions about the jury instructions, again, there may be two different instructions for willfulness, but I think both are correct statements of the law on willfulness. There is a misstatement to tax evasion, but it captures the concept of good faith. And for all of those reasons, Judge, Mr. Murphy's conviction should be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Jacobs. Mr. Bernhoff, your time expired, but we'll give you another minute.
Thank you,
Judge. So let me ask you, did Murphy object to these instructions that you say are erroneous?
Yes, he did. He queried the district.
What ground did he cite for objecting?
He pointed to the exact instruction that instructed on tax evasion, and he said something to the effect of, I thought I was charged with 7206 sub 1. And the judge says, that's right, you're not charged with tax evasion. And Murphy says, well, I'm confused. And the district court judge says, well, let the appellate court sort it out. I was confused, and I do a lot of trial work in tax, and those jury instructions are not simply an artful. They're absolutely a reversible error. And on the 7203, there were robust defenses at trial. He had the government's case in chief presented evidence that he was using the tax return preparers and CPAs of Anderson Dark. And Special Agent Gehring testified at the grand jury that she was actually corrected, that it wasn't Murphy who instructed these erroneous deductions. It was the George Benoit, who is the CPA for Anderson Arc. So there were defenses here. And those jury instructions, you can't charge evasion and then take the willfulness context of the invasion instruction away by saying that the government doesn't have to prove evasion to prove 7206 sub 1. It's a terribly confusing instruction, and the good faith defense is absolutely critical after Spies v. United States, the great Supreme Court case, and Cheek, and reversible error, clearly, and a new trial for Mr. Murphy. We'd urge the court to do that.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Bernhoff and Mr. Jacobs, and the court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.